in our altars, often at home, certainly at our temples. The disciplic line starts with Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta, Gaurakishore, etc. And at the end, way over there, is Jagannath Das Babaji, usually. And a contemporary or near contemporary of Jagannath Das Babaji was Baladev Vidyabhusan. Baladev Vidyabhusan, among many things, a very special service was done by him, and that was, given a certain circumstance, which there isn't time to describe what that circumstance was, he wrote a Gaudiya commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Previously, Lord Chaitanya did not, and therefore others did not, write commentary on Vedanta Sutra because Lord Chaitanya taught that there is already a natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra by the author of Vedanta Sutra. That's Srimad Bhagavatam. Circumstances, without the detail, required to resolve a conflict that a commentary be written, and Baladev wrote that commentary being guided by Vishwanath Chakravarti how to. And so he did. Called Govinda Bhasya. It's a long story, wonderful story. So Vishwanath guided the commentary for our disciplic line on Vedanta Sutra. And he wrote many commentaries on different literatures. And some of those literatures he wrote were also original literatures. This is one of them. And it's not exactly original in the sense that he just like, once upon a time, there was a, you know, some mythical story. Rather, that is, he took primarily from Rupa Goswami's writings, primarily from Nectar of Instruction, Nectar of Devotion, or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, some key verses, and some verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, and some verses from the Upanishads. We're going to hear one of them again this evening. And put together a description of the process, or what is bhakti and the stages of bhakti from beginning to end. 9 stages of bhakti from preliminary faith up to prema. That's the composition. And 1, 2, and 3 covered through Bhajana Kriya and into Anartha Nivritti. So, what is bhakti? And how does it begin? Was chapter 1. With references to the Shruti mantras and other things, and then gradually into Srimad Bhagavatam, and then bhakti begins by contact with bhakti. Bhakti is already within. I'm just summarizing now, chapter 1. Really simple language, lots of details. There's nothing material that can cause bhakti. Jnana cannot cause bhakti. Good karma cannot cause bhakti. A combination cannot cause bhakti. Bhakti is independent. Conversely, they, to be effective, are dependent on bhakti, with explanation. So bhakti causes bhakti. And once one connects with bhakti through a madhyama bhakta, then bhakti can begin. So that was chapter 1. Real simple. Simplified. And chapter 2 is, now that once bhakti has begun, what are the stages? And there's the stage of essential faith, to grow bhakti further, faith in the scripture that tells us about the goal, what bhakti is and its goal. And faith in the bhakti process. That, so, scripture in the process of bhakti itself. So then, that's adau shraddha. And by good fortune, we discussed that, remember, yadrichchaya. Somehow or other. Inexplicable good fortune. Causeless mercy. Okay, what's the cause of causeless mercy? Well, excuse me, causeless means it's causeless. Means it's causeless. Causeless is causeless. So we discussed that. And then through the association of sadhus, the bhakti process starts to unfold, bhajana kriya, the activities of bhakti. And then there we discussed unsteady and steady bhakti and different elements of less steady becoming more steady, moving towards the nishtha position. We discussed many other things, but that's where we're beginning today, where we left off. The nishtha position. What does it look like and how to advance it further? That's this evening. Chapter 4, fourth shower of nectar. Nectar begins to flow. So he begins this chapter referring to Srimad Bhagavatam. This second chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam is an essence chapter. It's very important. You can read it hundreds and hundreds of times and continue to learn more because it's essence text. And the first of these, the two verses that he quotes is this one. If you know the verse, you can say it with me. Shrinvatam sakata krishna punya shravana kirtana ridyantakstoya bhadrani vidhunoti saritsatam. Then the translation. Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead who is the Paramatma or Super Soul in everyone's heart and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. Well, we just heard the first two leaves of sadhana bhakti. The first two leaves of bhakti. Remember the bhakti creeper when it unfolds? Kleshagni and Shubhada. It's right here. Right here. It cleanses the desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee. Krishna, who is everyone's heart, the benefactor. Krishna's a janitor. Whoops. We don't want to call him a janitor. Krishna is the Supreme Pure. And because of his presence as the Supreme Pure, when we turn our attention to him in a serving mood, our heart becomes pure. And because it's that heart being impure, or avidya, if you remember, then that avidya is removed by vidya. That's another verse that's coming shortly. So, well, let's say it. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Yadahaitukam. Jnanam, or knowledge, displaces ignorance. Light displaces darkness. Knowledge displaces ignorance, and it's not theoretical knowledge, it's knowledge of who are we and who is Krishna and our relationship with Krishna. Knowledge awakens, and as knowledge awakens, ignorance is gone, and as ignorance is gone, the suffering is gone. Kleshagni, that was in the earlier chapter. And then Shubha Da, the giver of Shubha, auspiciousness. So, the urge to hear his messages. The urge to hear his messages. You're going to hear that at the end of this chapter, so note, it's right here in the Bhagavatam. That's awakening of auspiciousness. The essence of auspiciousness is spiritual. There's material kind of auspiciousness. We discussed this. There's punya karma, pious activities with the intention. We'll hear it in this chapter. Pious activities with the intention of getting some fruit of piety, that is, wealth or beauty or knowledge or strength or something. Om Jai Jagadisha Hare. You know that one. So, wanting something material, that's a material hankering in exchange for the business deal. I'll do some puja or some yajna and I'll get some punya and I'll prosper. So that's common. Krishna says it in Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, and it's true in the world, not just people that read Bhagavad Gita. People all over the world, people engage in religious activity with the intention of gaining some piety, and with that piety, prosperity in this life, and go to heaven after this life. It's standard all over the world, all over the world. So, Bhagavad Gita, of course, is teaching a different kind of shubha, da. So, bhakti gives spiritual shubha. And that spiritual shubha is attraction to the messages of the personality of Godhead. As, you know, the diminishing of the ignorance and the increasing of attraction for the messages of the personality of Godhead, the bhakti process is now moving. Bhajana Kriya. Adarshadha Sadhusanga Bhajana Kriya, right in this verse. And in that Bhajana Kriya, these two, Kleshagni and Shubhada. Then, Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. So key is this word, Naishtaki. Doesn't work. The very last word in the line, it's the Nishtha stage. Nishtha stage is where the abhadras, or the unwanted things, anartas, or abhadras, are nashta. They're destroyed. Not yet completely, that's this prayeshu, almost, nashta prayeshu, abhadreshu. It's not yet the prema stage, it's the nishtha stage. So nishtha comes after anarta nivritti. So let's do it again. There's preliminary faith, adarshadha. Then you get the good fortune of association of devotees, sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya. You do things with sadhus that sadhus do. And then the anarta nivritti stage. Up to the already stage number 5. That's where we are in this chapter. Nishtha. Stage of steadiness. And stage of steadiness is where the abhadras are not yet completely gone. That's the perfected stage. But bhakti has become so strong that whatever residual abhadras or anartas or impurities are there, they're overwhelmed by the power of bhakti. They're still there. But they're overwhelmed by the power of bhakti. So that's this nashta, prayeshu, abhadreshu, nityam, bhagavata sevaya. That's the doorway. The doorway is this nitya seva. Nitya seva. We discussed this in our Gita Nagari visit. Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses this term, nitya dharma, nitya seva, it's very similar. And in the mature stage is nitya siddha, perfect. Nitya siddha, Krishna prema, sadhya kavunoi, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching. So, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, this word Bhagavata, this is a Srimad Bhagavatam class along with the Madhurya Kundamani class. Bhagavata means in relation to Bhagavan. And one in relation to Bhagavan is the book, Bhagavata. And then there's the person, Bhagavata, in relation to Bhagavan, the devotee, who speaks the Bhagavat and lives the life of the Bhagavat. That's a person Bhagavat, and there's the book Bhagavat. So Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, service to both. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke, the vocative Uttama Shloke is Shloka, calling him, he who is praised with transcendental songs, Bhaktir Bhavati. Naishtaki. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. Bhakti, voila. It just makes its appearance. It becomes manifest. And in this Naishtaki or Nishta stage. So in these two verses, we have just heard the first five stages of bhakti. Preliminary faith, adav shraddha, sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya, anartha nivritti. That's this anartha nivritti, abhadreshu, nityam, bhagavata sevaya. So then nishta. So it's a snapshot. It's not the details and details. So based on these scriptural authorities, he's going to give us some of the details. Now some devotees get like, you know, a little nervous when they get all these details. They go, do I have to know all this stuff to go back to Godhead? And the answer is no. But we covered this yesterday. No, yeah, day before yesterday. Yesterday. Day before yesterday. That, it just will help you gauge how are you doing. Because it's a question people ask. It's a common question people ask. How do I know if I'm doing well in my progress in spiritual life? So this chapter is going to tell us specifically. Okay. Nishtha, according to Vishwanath, it means fixed or steady. Naishchalyam means non-movement or steady, fixed. Bhakti becomes then firm. As long as anarthas are present, one cannot be steady. Well, residual traces of them can be there, but bhakti has to be sufficiently strong to overwhelm those anarthas. Otherwise, steady is going to be unsteady. Then here's some of the detail. The in stages, there's five unsteadinesses or obstacles or doshas that are sequential. Laya means sleep. So usually people don't fall asleep during kirtan. Usually people don't fall asleep during prasadam. But sometimes people fall asleep during kirtan. And sometimes people fall asleep when they're hearing in class or whatever. Sometimes they fall asleep when chanting japa. I once sat in a class where the person giving the Bhagavatam class fell asleep during Bhagavatam class. Yes. He was so absorbed in his message, he just... Someone had to jiggle his shoulder to wake him up. But that's not normal, we don't do that. But, you know, so... an obstacle or it's a type of unsteadiness is sleep. Mental inactivity or sleep. So supposing one can get beyond sleeping, now you're awake, and there's distraction of the mind. These are having to do with the mind's activity. Distracted mind. And then supposing the mind becomes a little more capable of staying focused on something, but the mind wants to go to other topics besides spiritual topics, and the mind remains to a degree more or less indifferent to spiritual topics and really attentive to the other kind, apratipati, disinterest in spiritual topics. Sometimes a type of unsteadiness is caused by bad habits, just kind of a tendency for pride or tendency for greed or tendency to become angry. And then, this steadiness is certainly far away. And then finally, a little more subtle, but still, residual taste for material enjoyment, which isn't so terribly different from vikshepa, but vikshepa just means it's a little thicker. And rasasvada is a little thinner, but just a kind of like a tendency towards contemplating, whatever our favorite worldly enjoyment might be. For some people, it's wasting time on the internet reading news. Maybe some people know that one. And once you start doing it, it just becomes like you do it without even thinking you're doing it. You don't think about doing it, you just the mind goes there in between stuff, kind of like brain numbing in between stuff that's important. And whatever are the other residual taste for material enjoyment thus weakens the mind, spiritually speaking. Even materially speaking. So those are five. Those of you that were with us the first evening, we passed out a sheet of paper that has these five and gives some more information about these five. You can go back to guided if you don't remember the terms. But it's just to give you a picture of the kinds of things and stages of unsteadiness to surpass. Vishwanath says there are two types of steadiness. One is a little more obvious. That's steadiness through bhakti itself. And then a subset of this. Some people say that it's progressive. First comes steadiness in body, then words, then mind. But there's other authorities that say, no, it's different for different people, and it depends upon your eagerness to serve in a particular way. Some may be particularly steady this way or that way, the other way. So there's differences of opinion. And then there's another type of steadiness besides steadiness in bhakti itself. There can be steadiness in elements favorable to bhakti, which is nice. Favorable to bhakti elements include giving respect to others, humility, mercy, friendliness. So sometimes we find those characteristics, at least temporarily, prominent in someone, more prominent than others. But there's not yet steadiness in sakshat bhakti, or direct devotional service, the nine processes of bhakti. We find that. And it's not so uncommon. There's good people in this world. And the nature of that, the good people in this world, depends upon what its foundation is. But we know from Bhagavad Gita and from practical experience, the modes of nature change. Because they're competing for supremacy. They're not stable. that steadiness even in those elements that help to achieve steadiness in bhakti, they're temporary, and it's not the steadiness, that's not the essence, steadiness in bhakti. So the opposite, or conversely, someone may be arrogant or somehow contaminated, but somehow this, their dedication and commitment to core practices of bhakti. I know some people like this. And, you know, the lower nature of things are seen in their character, but they're somehow dedicated to the bhakti process, bhakti itself. Now, mixed bhakti for sure, because of the lower modes of nature influencing bhakti. But, you know, very steady over, we'll see, steady over a period of time in the direct practices of bhakti. Only one who is wise and experienced, Vishwanath says, can recognize the difference between these two types of steadiness. Steadiness manifest in the mode of goodness characteristics. Other aspects of nishtha, he likes to do this chapter by chapter. Again, you remember that chart? So that the chart, the essence of the chart is offenses against the holy name are most serious. And only when the holy name becomes free from offense can one become truly advanced in the bhakti process, because there are other categories of activity. So spiritualization of eye and mind, pervasive in this nishtha. Traces of rajas and tamas may be present, but they cannot act due to steady bhakti's influence. Right? There's still some anarthas, there's still some influence of the lower modes, they're still there to some degree, but they can't act. That's a sign of nishtha. Bhakti is so strong, they don't act. Meditation, other topics in the nishtha stage, other topics of the mind wandering here and there, it's greatly reduced, only a trace. So probably most of us aren't there yet. But that, you know, there's a nice explanation given here how to get there, right in this chapter. Material attachments, well, there's some material attachments. Some material attachments are prominent. And others, there's detachment and so forth. Okay, now how to determine who's on this nishtha platform and also how to get there. Vishwanath is teaching intensity in endeavor to hear and chant. This is the Bhagavat mark. Intensity of effort or endeavor to hear and chant, or laxity. It's effort, the intention and the energy invested in that intention when hearing and chanting. So Vishwanath writes, if someone is steady day after day after day and in their effort to engage in chanting and hearing and other forms of devotion, their effort is strong and intense, then this anartha nivritti stage will pass quickly. And offenseless chanting will be quickly approached. Now, quickly is a relative term. It doesn't say how many seconds or minutes or hours or days, but relatively speaking, quickly. Such sadhakas are approaching the stage of nishtha, And so the chapter ends with a summary. Then I'm going to do a little bit more. Laxity or intensity, two things. Laxity or intensity of effort, specifically here in chanting and our primary angas of bhakti, as well as the difficulty or ease in hearing, chanting, and engaging in essential devotional practices. These two are the criterion for entering into steadiness as well as evaluating steadiness. So next time you're asked that question in a bhakti riksha class or whatever, how do I know how I'm, whether I'm progressing or not, or how I'm progressing? Now you know Madhurya Kandamani's answer. I'll give it's comparable, the language is different. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's answer elsewhere is when the attraction for hearing topics of Krishna is strong and the attraction for engaging the senses in sense objects for enjoyment purpose, it slackens. It's just, I'll give an example. Somebody I know in New York City, New Yorkers, one of the things, there's different characteristics of New Yorkers, but one of them is they really value the intellectual, stimulating stuff that goes on in New York. You know, museums and Philharmonic and some speaker and, you know, something that's like cultural and a museum, the special show or something or something or something. It's like a jewel for the rotten apple. So they pride themselves in, you know, learning the latest and seeing the latest and a Broadway show or something spectacular or something like that. So one devotee was doing this for her whole life with another devotee friend, another non-devotee friend. But now as she became a devotee, they'd have this thing once a year, they'd get together and make a plan of what they're going to do together, and that's, you know, the cultural arena of New York City. And then plan it and talk about it and prepare for it and find out about this composer or that speaker or this poet or this whatever it is. Exhibit it at this museum and then go and experience it and, you know, sit and have their tea and crumpets somewhere or something. Have a dinner out together and just, you know, intellectually get stimulated together. Friend bonding with culture. So as this devotee became a devotee, they kind of lost interest in that. Not like somebody said, oh, that's bad stuff, you don't want to waste your time doing that bad stuff. They just didn't have interest in it anymore. But, you know, that's like if you're a New Yorker, you don't have interest in that anymore. What's wrong with you? So she had to, you know, explain to her friend, I can read Srimad Bhagavatam with you. That would be really nice. But, you know, I don't know if I want to do that anymore. I have to be true to myself. I value you and our relationship. But, and then, you know, usually when those things happen, people think you're not fun anymore. Or, you know, there's different ways of saying it. You know, what got into you? You become a fanatic. Or they have different ways of responding. But it tells you something about the nature of relationships. The material relationship is I scratch your back, you scratch my back, and we're friends. You stop scratching my back, and you know what? Our friendship is over. You got to scratch my back over here, not over there. So that's a test. That the attraction for the object of the senses is subsiding. And we all have our favorite ones, so that some subside more quickly than others, but it's a sign of progress. And then, in turn, subsiding over there, but increasing over here. And it's fine that you have a particular liking for the ones over here. Some persons like deity worship, some persons like kirtan, some persons like cooking, some persons like scripture study and discussion, some persons like combination of things. We have different natures, and that's just fine. But an increasing taste for the spiritual aspect of those things, not just learning new things, but the spiritual benefit and reality of those things, that's a sign of moving through the anartha nivritti stage and progressing towards the nishtha stage. We'll say the same thing in a different way. There's so many inspiring methods of strengthening chanting, going more deeply away from the mechanical form of chanting. But the main essence of going beyond mechanical chanting is the effort to do so. And then you take this tool or that tool, the other tool, and get absorbed in it, and it's going to help you. And if you don't have that intensity of purpose, then it's the tool that you'll just be like a child with a toy, and you'll play with it for a while and then toss it away and want another toy. Distracted. So intensity of effort in the hearing and chanting activities. That means there's some faith, and the faith has grown and become matured enough that it's kind of self-perpetuating faith. You really look forward to the next time you can, whatever that thing is that gives you that connection, Krishna connection. And it grows and it grows and it grows. That's it. That will lead you to steadiness. It'll take you more quickly through the anartha nivritti stage. So these two things, laxity or intensity of effort, the difficulty or ease in hearing, chanting, and other essential devotional practices. Now here's bonus. Now this isn't part of Vishwanath's chapter, but this is Burjan Prabhu. Some of you may know him. He is a very scholarly devotee. I'm going to give you a copy of this whole presentation. He has a copy, so you can take pictures if you want, but you get the whole presentation. Just attend a class and it'll magically appear in your inbox. So some devotees like this type of thing. Some devotees get bewildered. If you're the bewildered type, you can just kind of fall asleep for a little while. But otherwise, for those of you that like to, you know, evaluate, we have these kind of parallel things going on. If you remember from the very first chapter, if you were here, there was this Taittiriya Upanishad, where it's in Bhagavad Gita, Anamoya, Pranamoya, Gyanamoya, Manamoya, Gyanamoya, Vijnanamoya, Anandamoya. Six stages of realization of truth, of the Supreme. So the first three, as you see on the left side, those are what does it say? Material consciousness. So, you know, like a child, not Krishna conscious yet, everything goes in the mouth, anamoya, and then etc. So only when it comes to the jnana, vijnana, and anandamaya, it becomes transcendental. So that's one kind of analysis. Then in this jnana maya stage, take a look over here on the right hand column, shraddha, sadhu, sangha, bhajana, kriya. There's this like a conceptual understanding, not yet fully realized stage of, I have some preliminary faith, I enjoy associating with devotees, I have some conviction in keeping the regulative activities of devotional practice. And so I'm doing that. It's in the theoretical stage. Now, it's not like a bucket. I can't have any realization. But when you start moving into this anartha nivritti, a removal of offenses and reactions of offenses, up to steadiness, etc., then realization becomes more profound, more marked. Vijnanamaya. And then anandamaya, the bhava and prema stage. That's easy to understand. Then over here on the right-hand side, and there's different authorities that have analyzed this in a different way. I'm giving this because people ask it. And you may not be one of the asking kind because it's too complex and forget it, I'm not really interested. But some people are really interested. So you can have this and you can show them this if you don't really understand it. Study it. You may be interested type person. Kanishta Adhikari, introductory stage, elementary stage, there we go, is these three. Shraddha, Sadhusanga, Bhajana, Kriya. It's not rigid. Again, it's not like a bucket. It's just moving in a kind of general stroke, brush stroke. The middle stage goes up to, this is a big kind of a difference. There's different opinions on this, but up to the asakti stage, that is, the uttama stage doesn't begin technically for some until the bhava stage is reached. Others say the uttama stage is reached at the upper regions of nishtha. That, you know, because otherwise there has to be some sense, some experience, some palpable experience of Krishna connection to be steady. And that palpable Krishna connection stage, that's a higher stage. Anyway, there's differences of a view on this topic. So the nine stages of bhakti, that's Shraddha to Prema, that's the topic of Madhurya Kandamani. And then over here is, because this is the Bhagavatam. There's several places in the Bhagavatam, beginning, intermediate, advanced. And since Chaitanya Charitamrita, characteristics of those in the beginning, intermediate, and advanced stages of bhakti. And we, so here's Bhanu Swami, and this is our last slide. Some of you may not know Bhanu Swami. He's a translator of so many things from Sanskrit to English. Very prolific. Devotee, very scholarly, very warm and friendly and very happy and affable, and he laughs a lot. He's really nice. He's lots of fun. But he's translated so many things. So in his analysis, the sadhana stage, sadhana bhakti, it goes all the way up to asakti. The bhava stage, of course, is after that, the bhava stage, and the prema stage is the prema stage. That's his view. And then, as far as this kanishta madhyama, etc., there's verses in the Bhagavatam that speak of the kanishta stage, and in that kanishta stage, by the Bhagavatam's definition, they don't have association of devotees yet. They're Prakriti Bhaktas. They have an idea of bhakti, but not any real association of bhaktas. So they are not really at the sadhusanga stage yet. So Madhyama starts with sadhusanga. Madhyama starts with sadhusanga and can goes bhajana kriya all the way up to, as he shows up here, the asakti stage. And then comes the bhava stage, and the uttama is these top two stages. So, What's the takeaway from all of that? Well, there's different opinions. And some scholarly type devotees get really like unraveled when there's differences of opinion. But there's differences of opinion. It's not a rigid acharya statement on this topic. But it's a question the devotees ask. As they're learning this terminology, the beginning, intermediate, and advanced, the Kanishtha, Madhyama, Uttama, how does that compare to these nine stages of bhakti? It comes up. Not like a super common question, but it comes up. So, this I feel is a little more studied, and so here's an explanation, the Madhyama stage. Okay? And then this Anandamoya, Vijnanamoya, Jnanamoya, transcendental realization, transcendental consciousness. This is saying, when you begin devotional service, even in the theoretical Shraddha, Sadhusanga, Bhajana, Kriya stage, you're from the Taittiriya Upanishad perspective, you have entered into the transcendental consciousness building phase of a living entity. Or say it negatively, prior to Shraddha, Sadhusanga, and Bhajana Kriya, you're still in the less than transcendental stage, or you could say the animal stage. With a human form of life. So the Madhyamas, back to chapter 1, the Madhyamas, that's us, we're, at least we're in this Anarjanavritti stage somewhere, and maybe, heading towards steadiness or whatever, but at least in that stage, we have a lot of responsibility. We have a lot of responsibility to not pretend or project ourselves as perfect beings, nor expect somebody that's leading a bhakti vriksha group that they're going to be a perfect being. That's not realistic. But we're sharing the bhakti message, and we're trying to lead a life of self-realization and encourage others to do the same, so they can come to this transcendental consciousness, Shraddha, Sadhusanga, Bhajana, Kriya. The Madhyamas have a very, very great opportunity and responsibility. You don't have to be, quit your job and leave your family and take sannyas and do that full time. But it is something that's everyone's responsibility to your capacity. Otherwise, the world around us is going to the dogs. And it's not like, you're going to go rescue the world. But you should be a conduit for bhakti. And that's going to help the world. There's one little video recording in the New York Temple, Henry Street Temple, where Srila Prabhupada is speaking about how the Hare Krishna movement began. It's how we're going to start the festival of the Holy Name Friday evening. It's the title is going to be In the Beginning, and one of the things in the beginning is going to be Prabhupada saying how it started in the beginning. It's a little video. It's just 3-4 minutes short. In the beginning, there wasn't anything. The modes of ignorance and passion, that's what was in the beginning. And Prabhupada said we just had the street Sankirtan. And he said, people may hear, they may not hear. It creates an atmosphere of auspiciousness for the benefit of the whole human society. I mean, he had that faith. Just people may hear, may not hear. They may understand, they may not understand. They may appreciate, they may not appreciate. It creates auspiciousness. And New York isn't really an auspicious place. Chicago is neither. And how to create auspiciousness in a place that's not auspicious? The challenge was how people will understand this message of pure goodness when it's steeped in ignorance and passion. How is it possible? Faith in the holy name. So by that propagating of the holy name, which is something we can all do, and propagating this knowledge of the Vedas through Prabhupada's books, we can all do that. We may not be good at it, but we can all do it. And, you know, little by little by little, it's making an impact on the direction society is moving in. It's creating an atmosphere of auspiciousness. And that collectively, it's far more effective than one person over there. That's their service. You get the idea? It's something we, each of us, can do. And then depending upon your relationships you have in work or at school or wherever or whatever, then some persons are going to be more interested than others. Just anecdotal, but I was at the last place I was, I won't even say where I was, there's somebody that met a Russian lady who came to America. When she came to America, she became a nanny, like a, you know, babysitter for an Indian family, a Russian lady looking after, so that was her occupation. And that Indian family went to the temple, Chicago Temple. So she's this Russian lady learning, you know, about, you know, from her perspective, Hindu practices, and she felt at home. So this devotee that knows, then at, she later, she went on and became a PhD and is now a practicing professional somewhere, and she has fond memories. Then she found out that this person who she met over there, this other place, you know, is practicing Krishna consciousness. So now they're having discussions about Krishna consciousness. And now she wants to come back when she visits her old friends in Chicago, visit the temple and read, you know, she's willing to read Prabhupada's books and because she's interested. But who knows who's out there and how many years it'll take to develop a level of interest where there's something. So, but, you know, create auspiciousness. We're not fruitive, we're devotional. We want to create auspiciousness. And it's so some people out there is going to impact more. Some people is going to impact less. We want to create auspiciousness. So we do things that are for that purpose. Internally, we're cultivating in our little incubation chamber of our heart, we're cultivating bhakti. And then it spreads in our life, into our family, beyond our family, beyond the four walls, into the community and so forth. And synergistically, it's very powerful, beyond our ability to understand how powerful. And it's what we can do in as the world's going crazier and crazier. Okay, so Madhura Kandamani, chapter 4. A roadmap to get to the prema stage. Any discussion? I was thinking to have to cover two chapters, but this group has said lots of really good questions, so I thought I'll only cover one chapter and see about the discussion this evening. Any topics? Yes.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, all of these classes that you've been giving, they've been really helpful. I've heard bits and pieces, you know, from your classes before, but this kind of brought it together.
Hmm.
One thing that I really struggle with, when we get to the offenses part, it creates a little bit of fear in interacting with devotees.
Hmm.
And sometimes I find I have these tendencies that are so deep-rooted that...
The offense kind or the fear kind?
The offense kind.
Hmm.
That even though I'm realizing that they're not good, but they tend to take over.
Conditioning. So what to do?
So what to do?
When it changed a lot, but Southwest Airlines used to pride themselves in making jokes when they put on their, you know, through the announcements and stuff. You know, we wouldn't even get on this plane if we thought you'd need these oxygen masks, but in case there's something that we're not expecting is going to happen, 4 oxygen masks will fall from the ceiling. And so, you know, you go through all those things so many times and you're like, what am I doing getting on this airplane again? It's a government regulation. It's a little drill and you hear it again and again. You can kind of tune it out, but you start thinking about, you know, what are they doing? They're telling you, you may not make it to your destination. Mandated by the government to warn you, you may not make it to your, in case you don't make it, you know, leave your stuff on board and jump out on the wing. And here's the life raft and here's, you know, the whole thing. So, I still fly. Or, you know, ride in your car at night. You know, they have all these things about don't drink and drive, which means that some number of people out there on the roads at night, they're drunk. And I'm getting in my car and putting on the seatbelt and got my fingers crossed that I'll make it to the destination, won't hit a drunkard. Or, you know, do we do things in our life knowing that there's risk? Now, is there risk in associating with devotees when I have tendencies that are towards devotees, towards people, defensive? Well, I need companionship, and I need companionship that's going to be a lifting. But then if there's this tendency to make offenses, then I'm going to get a problem instead of some benefit. So I'm paralyzed. So what we do is we put on the seatbelt and we, you know what to do in case that there is an emergency. We don't not fly. We don't not get in our car and drive. We don't stay away from the association of devotees because I might make some, not might, I'm, that these tendencies are there and for sure it's going to come out. Yet we need the association of devotees. It's scriptural, and it's from practical experience as well. We need association of devotees. We need to avoid offenses. So you put the two together. And this is Prabhupada's teaching, in a sincere way, on a daily basis, vancha kalpa turubhyascha kripa sindubhyayeva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. And we submit ourselves vaishnavebhyo namo namaha unto the Vaishnavas in the mood of serving the Vaishnavas. Now, you have children, and your children are sometimes, you know, polite and sometimes probably a little disobedient or a little not polite. Now, you don't like, get out of the house if you're going to talk like that. You're not going to do that. You're their mother, and you're, it's just part of parenting, having children that are a little unruly and a little this and a that. And your parenting response, so in the devotee community, just like, you know, you would like, as you would like others to forgive you for your shortcomings, make sure you're doing the same things for other shortcomings. Don't have the expectation that's unrealistic that the devotees, the assembled devotees, are going to be flawless. In fact, when you come together and you see more closely the qualities and the faults, you'll certainly see some faults or doshas or some imperfections, just as are within me, they're within others. And we had this topic of accepting. Where was that? Somewhere recently. Oh yeah, it was in Gita Nagari. I just did some of the same messages again in Minneapolis before coming to Chicago. So accept your own shortcomings and be respectful towards the devotees. And if you make mistakes, then you apologize for your mistakes. Seek the devotees' kindness. And be kind upon those devotees that make their mistakes in their dealings with you. Take shelter of the bhakti process, in short. And this is part of the bhakti process. Knowing that we're imperfect. Okay. Not a perfect answer, you still have to be careful, but be careful, move forward and be careful with faith in the bhakti process. Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, thank you so much for this series of lectures. They're so much hope giving, especially seeing where I'm on the map. Otherwise, I would be just getting lost in that ocean of anathas and never get to see outside. One particular thing from today's class, you mentioned going to the nishtha, that needs that intensity or eagerness for the chanting and hearing practices.
Yeah, and
you mentioned while describing this slide, it's only the effort or endeavor to go to that stage that is enough.
No, not the only thing that I said. That's the essence. There's application points of that intensity, but the essence is the intensity.
Yeah, it's good knowledge. I have been struggling. I have the desire or hankering, but somehow that doesn't come into my practices. I'm not really seeing that.
Keep endeavoring. It's very simple. Example from Nectar Devotion is a child's propensity to walk. How long does it take for a child to walk? For a while. Some children learn more quickly than others, but it takes a while. But the walking propensity is inside, and so by exercise, you know, the motor skills develop, and then they can, not only they can walk, but they're running around the room. So, similarly, as walking propensity is there within the child, the devotional propensity is there within us. And we just practice and practice and practice and practice. Recognizing it's innate, and it's not coming out so quickly or whatever, in my case, for whatever the reasons, I'm very covered. but I have faith in the bhakti process. You just stay on track with investing in the bhakti process with faith. And the cleansing will go on, however long that takes. And, you know, a little hint is those devotees who become a little more advanced, not only they find newer and newer varieties of unwanted things, but they stay continually focused on what the goal is, refining their understanding of what the goal is, refining the clarity that they have inside of what's ruling their lives that keeps them from that attaining that goal, and they have the strength and clarity to stay with the process of redefining, recalibrating, redirecting, taking shelter of the Bhajana Kriya stage to take care of the Anartana Vritti stage. And they just stay on course. You know, regularly cultivating like that. It's not, you know, we'll say it negatively. There are some of us, some of our sadhakas, that are more in the mechanical phase. And then therefore the bhakti process is slower. Doesn't mean it's not working. It's just slower. The Anartana Vritti stage is slower. Now if you want it to go more quickly, here's how. Intensity of effort, sustained over time. That's what the previous slide says. If they are steady day after day after day, and the intense in their effort, so we're unsteady in our effort. But steady is steady, being intent in effort. So we strive in that direction. That's the Bhagavad Dharma process. Steadiness in hearing and chanting leads to purification and everything else. And so we're not yet fully steady. That's where we are. We strive to become steady with faith in the bhakti process. And keep in good association. And that's standard. Hear regularly. Yes. More? Okay. Behind you.
Maharaj, my question is about this rasavada.
Okay.
So, like in Bhagavad Gita also, there is a verse when apuryamanam achala pratishtam, that verse where desires come, but sadhu doesn't do anything about it. So, something connected to that residual taste for material enjoyment that distracts the mind. So, what is something practical? I mean, I might not essentially act on it, but it feels so bad that such desire can appear in heart.
Well, it has to do with our material association. The toilet room doesn't smell good. The material association results in such tendencies from prolonged material association. Such tendencies are still there, residual tendencies. But the good news is Krishna says, I take care of those residual tendencies. And we're dependent. But that's good, because Krishna's kind. And so you keep demonstrating what to do besides feeling bad, I have these residual tendencies. You continue in your bhakti efforts to try to be in your relationship with Krishna and make offerings of what isn't in these other tendencies in your according to your capacity. And you make those offerings to Krishna. counting on, praying to Krishna, those residual tendencies, I need your help. They're very strong. They're very persistent. And they're very embarrassing. So, Krishna, I need your help. We just stay there, and Krishna will help you. Again, you know, it's really easy to understand these things in terms of parent and child. So supposing you're a child, you're looking up at your parent. I know that I know that when I talk back to you, it's I don't feel good about it, but I talk back to you. Now, what's mom and dad going to say? You better feel bad about it. You're not going to say that. So Krishna is very kind. And we're dependent on his kindness. So the residual tendencies, and Krishna, I need your help. He knows you need his help. But if you're asking for his help, then he'll help. More than he'll intervene. It's opening the heart. That's all. That's the bhakti process. Okay. What's that room over there? Huh? Oh, it's a bathroom. Okay. Like 15 kids going into the bathroom. Popular plays. Okay, go ahead.
I just want to understand, these are like lesser degree?
As far as I understand, yes. It doesn't specify like that, but it seems yes. I mean, sleep is definitely, you know, thicker than the one at the bottom. Yeah.
Maharaj, you were saying to have some tools for attentive chanting.
Yeah. You want to hear some
yes.
examples?
Yes.
Okay. Here's a list. One mantra at a time. That's one. You've heard that one? From the heart. It's another. Please accept me. It's another. Just here, without expanding. That's another. I mean, it's kind of like one mantra at a time, but just here, its emphasis is on capturing the mind by the hearing process. Calling out like a child for a mother. That's another. And so, and etc. There's a longer list, much longer list. So any one of those, instances, the rest of the longer list, they can be very effective, provided there's this intention of, you know, then fill in the blank, whatever that sankalpa is, that it's driven by the intention to go deep, more deeply into your relationship with Krishna. Is that right? Our children are getting restless. I don't blame them. You have something over here?
Maharaj, my question is like, a devotee is in the Madhyama stage and he's persistent, he has faith in Krishna, and he's practicing his devotional service. And say the end comes, the last phase comes, And will Krishna quickly push him through the prema and power stage?
Oh, come on. You know, Krishna will attract him, not push him. Okay? It becomes a matter of heart and relationship, not a matter of, you know, obligation and duty. Interesting question. Anything else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.